Welcome to Transforming Education, Leadership Lessons. This podcast is hosted by Northwestern College. We're bringing you thought leaders who are influencing education and the world around them. Each episode provides new leadership lessons, so you can learn how to embrace your own influence.
Leadership has nothing to do with title or position. That leadership has to do with impact. And the role of a leader isn't to create followers, it's to enable more leaders.
Take away leadership qualities that inspire.
I think good leaders really get people brought together around a cause and can inspire them to be better than they were yesterday or to do something great.
Care about others.
We need teachers out there that are caring and compassionate and are interested in the student beyond the discipline that they're teaching.
Show people they matter.
We don't have a bullying problem. We don't even have a gun problem. We have a mattering problem.
By knowing you matter.
You matter to yourself first before you can matter to someone else.
So further your impact.
When you just authentically love your students, I just don't think you can help but grow.
Understand your core values.
You can tell pretty quickly any core leader whether or not he or she is there for the mission at hand, for the people that they serve, or whether they're there for themselves.
And align your mission.
Everything we do on campus, whether it's someone in the maintenance department or someone teaching in the classroom or to coach, it should tie back to our mission of impacting students for the cause of Christ.
Discover how to use your influence to inspire others.
That is why the relationships is so critical in everything we do, because when people know you care about them, they know yet they have your best interest, and then it sinks in.
Let's welcome our host, Gary Richardson.
Thank you, Leslie, and I want to thank everybody else for listening to Transforming Education Leadership Lessons. You have tons of options for podcasting, and your time is valuable, and because of that, we bring in thought partners to inspire and influence your leadership. Today, we will be discussing leadership lessons with Dr. Matt Townsley. Matt is currently an assistant professor of educational leadership at the University of Northern Iowa and previously served in the Solon Community School District as a teacher and administrator. Matt has firsthand experience implementing and leading lasting grading reform and is recognized nationally as a speaker or presenter on the topic of standards-based grading. Matt has recently published a book with Solution Tree called Making Grades Matter, Standards-Based Grading in a Secondary PLC at Work. You can find Matt's publications and presentations at mctownsley.net. Welcome to the podcast, Matt.
Well, thanks, Gary. It's a pleasure to be here, and so a pleasure to talk about a topic I'm very interested in.
Yeah, you've been doing that for a number of years. In fact, when I was interning at Emmitsburg, one of our principals, I think, went down and visited school before you moved on to UNI, my alma mater, by the way. So thank you for taking that on and for leading this initiative. Having said that, I wonder if you mind just helping us to get to know you a little bit better and our listeners and sharing anything about your background or interests that I may not have covered.
Yeah. So my wife and I have four wonderful kids, all different, unique in the way that they came into our family and the way that the timing of that is just a fun story for a whole nother podcast, Gary. But we have a full house of elementary and younger age students, which keeps both my wife and I very busy. On the professional side of things, as you mentioned, obviously I was a math teacher. I kind of saw myself as kind of like a techie early on, taught some computer classes as well, kind of got interested in all that instructional technology stuff. But I just really found out that I was neither a techie nor a math person. I mean, I liked them both, but what I really liked was education. And so, Gary, I know that I teach future school leaders, but I even tell my future school leaders, I never saw myself as a school leader.
Right.
It just kind of happened, you know, sometimes doors open. And so I found myself in school leadership and I loved it so much once I got into it that I thought it would just be really neat to help influence the next generation of school leaders, as I know you do as well over there, Gary. It's so satisfying to be in this field of education. And that really is both my profession and my hobby, if you will. Like there's a blur in there between a hobby and a profession. It's education and educational leadership.
Yeah, there's something about connecting with aspiring principals and trying to give them the best that you can and lead them in the right direction and also let them grow a little bit. So appreciate your work with that for sure. And you ended up with all your work in standards-based grading to write a book. I just wonder if you'd mind sharing just a little bit of a snapshot of what that book is about.
Yeah, so one day when I was in the district office in Solon, our high school principal Nathan, who's the co-author of the book, called me up and said, "Hey, Matt, we've got this problem. You see, at this moment, we were not all in yet in Solon with standards-based grading, Gary. Like, we were just kind of in the early stages. Some teachers were trying it out and so forth." And so he said, "Hey, Matt, there's this problem. We've got this one section of math class, one of our teachers who's doing standards-based grading, and we've got this other section of the exact same math class, and this teacher's not doing standards-based grading. And at the end of the first quarter, some kids and parents want to have, like, they want to move sections of the class. Like, they want to be involved in this standards-based grading thing." He says, I can do that. Like, I can work with our counselor. We can make these schedule changes, but Matt, we can't have this like forever. It's just not working out. And so as a result of that, we decided to go on a journey in our school of not just making standards-based grading something that was what a few teachers were doing, but we're on a journey as an entire secondary school system to make it be the thing that we do. And we document that journey in the book. But as a result of it, we didn't really have any books or real solid sources to lean on in our own learning. Like, we just found ourselves kind of like grabbing this resource, reading this blog, finding this person online, reading some really solid K-12 grading resources by some awesome people like Dr. Tom Guskey, Ken O'Connor, Rick Warner. Like, they were the awesome people to read, but all of their work was very K-12 oriented. And so we're just like, we're just gonna do the best we can. We have to blaze this trail, we will. And then we got acquainted with this researcher and writer named Kathy Vatterott. And she was actually writing a book, another one of those K-12 books on grading. She interviewed us to be a part of her book. And she said, "Matt, like, you guys have something special here. What you're doing needs to be shared with other people." And so over the course of several years of just thinking about it and just writing up drafts, eventually what we have today is what we believe is a book that's specifically written for middle school and high school educators.
Okay.
That really will support them, not with the why of standards-based grading, but the how. There's a ton of great books and resources out there on the why of making these grading shifts. Our book is specifically on the how, and it's specifically written for middle school and high school educators, where this shift, as I know you know, Gary, is the hardest to do. So we see our book as being the how for secondary educators to make this meaningful shift in grading practices, making grades matter, standards-based grading in a secondary professional learning community at work.
So the how then would it deal with professional learning community? So I'm just interested in, is the focus there of making this scalable at the secondary level when you did, was that through the work of your PLCs? And if so, how did you organize that? What did you expect?
That's a great question, Gary. In fact, we didn't really realize the power of our professional learning community emphasis and philosophy until we sat down to write the book. As schools would come and visit us to learn in our early implementation years about how they could take this practice back to their schools, we eventually didn't make the connection as how powerful our teams were working together. For example, when a math teacher is trying to transition from making his or her tests be based on points to really be more about reporting learning and then documenting that in the gradebook, it's best for that math teacher to have other math teachers to work with and kind of bring their minds together to do that. When it comes to figuring out what it means to be proficient or almost proficient on a specific math standard, who best to do that with than another math teacher? And so as we reflected, wrote the book, as we reflected upon what got us there, what we found out is our simultaneous professional learning community journey and our standards-based grading journey, they were parallel. Maybe you knew this, maybe not, but for our listeners, Gary, our high school, our middle school, and actually our elementary during my tenure at Solon were all named model professional learning communities by Solution Tree. And so we were recognized for our not just 1 year of doing this professional learning community thing, but I was there for 8 years, and that work still continues today of really thinking about how can we together move forward and be collectively accountable and responsive for student learning.
Sure. So for a little more background and probably for context, what is the definition of standards-based grading that you would really like our listeners to understand coming from you?
Yeah, you bet, Gary. And there's a lot of great books, and there's some nuances in how different authors explain this idea of standards-based grading. But really, it's about communicating learning rather than earning in our grade books. It's about communicating learning rather than earning in our report cards. And so typically, a secondary gradebook in particular is task-oriented. It's, hey, to what extent did you complete this homework or do this extra credit? And so it's very task-oriented. The best way to describe a typical secondary gradebook is it is a series, it's a timeline of events documented in ink. When we move towards standards-based grading, it's about learning. And now it's our documentation of the extent to which a student has demonstrated specific learning outcomes, standards, targets, whatever you want to call them. And it's in pencil. It's documented in pencil. Right. Why? Because early in the semester, we're just communicating where the student is at. If that status changes later on in the marking period, we're going to go back and we're going to erase that in the gradebook and update it based upon the new evidence of learning. And so we're really focusing more on learning in the gradebook, less on earning, and we are separately communicating the extent to which a student has done all those wonderfully valuable employability skills. Like, are they responsible? Are they respectful? Like, those things still matter. They're just not garbledygooked in there in the points system.
Right, right.
They're separate. And the best way to describe it is like my weight and my height are different. If you try to index those things two together, you're not going to know how big I am or how tall I'm not. It's all communicated together. And so standards-based grading separately communicates learning from employability skills and has a focus of learning rather than earning in the gradebook or report card.
And the pacing is flexible.
Yes, totally. Because we believe that students do learn at different rates and different paces, the pace is going to become flexible. And that's where that pencil mentality in the gradebook really comes into play, Gary. You got it.
Well, from somebody who used that red record-keeping book and had very immaculate penmanship with a pencil, and in each square I had points and added them up every week, you know, this is a bummer. I remember doing that and being so proud of, you know, being on top of things every Friday, and kids knew where they were at. And I may or may not have told them they're great in front of everybody else, right?
We're all learning and growing, Gary.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. So in Iowa, how many schools do you know that have converted to standards-based grading in totality?
Yeah, that's a really great question, Gary. In fact, just a couple of years ago, I emailed all secondary administrators in the state of Iowa. Hmm. And so I have this information. It's not the most up-to-date, but it's fairly accurate. And of course, things have changed in the past couple of years. But at the time, 28% of the secondary schools that responded to the survey, so that's almost one out of every three,
yep,
said that they were all in with standards-based grading. In addition to that, there was another, you know, about 30% or so that said, we have a vision of implementing this in the next, you know, 1 to 5 years. And so, I mean, that's a pretty good number, Gary. And we could talk later on about the extent to which there's, you know, there's solid implementation, but there is a strong mindset. There's a strong mentality. There's a strong bend, if you will, of secondary schools in Iowa really thinking seriously about this standards-based grading thing. I mean, if you were to look back, Gary, at all of the standards-based grading gurus, all the grading gurus I mentioned earlier, Tom Gusky, Ken O'Connor, Rick Wormley, they've all visited the state of Iowa multiple times in the past 10 years for different conferences and workshops and AEA and invitations and so forth. Like, grading is a hot topic, and I think the pandemic has definitely just elevated that in our minds as well.
Sure. So we try to focus a little bit, obviously, on leadership, and that's your title at UNI is Professor of Educational Leadership. Specifically, how does a building principal lead this initiative if given the opportunity?
The first thing that a principal ought to do is work with his or her staff to establish what the purpose of grading is in their school. Sue Brookhart wrote a wonderful article a number of years ago called Starting the Conversation About Grading. It was one of those ASCD educational leadership articles. And there she says that there is a way not to do this from a leadership perspective.
Okay.
And it's not to start with all of the intricacies like, oh, should we put zeros or 50s in the grade book? Or should we do half credit for redos or full credit for redos? Like, don't start with the down in the weeds stuff, because we can get too caught up in the details there. She suggests, and I believe based upon my experience at Solon and working with schools, that we first have to start with what's the purpose of grading. You see, Gary, when I was a ninth grade student myself back in the day, my ninth grade science teacher would award me points for completing worksheets, would award me points for completing a lab report, would award me points for doing well on a test, complete learning. I would also get points taken away if I got kicked out of class for poor behavior.
Yep.
And so the purpose of grades in my ninth grade science class was a garbledygook of different things. And so, Gary, maybe you would have got a 97% in that class. Maybe I got a 92%. but I actually could have learned more than you, but I got kicked out of class a few times, right? And so typically our grades do not do a very good job representing learning. And so as a school leader, we first have to establish and get our staff to agree on what is the number one purpose of grading in our school. The gradebook cannot adequately serve more than one master, if I can use a biblical reference here, right? Like, you can only serve one master in the gradebook. And so that's the very first step. The second step then is, as a result of agreeing, hopefully, that the purpose of grades is to communicate learning, what's going to be our homework practices? What's going to be our practices related to, you know, flexible timelines? What's the gradebook or report card going to look like? All of those things can only be discussed. I call those the grading principles. All of those can only be discussed after first agreeing on the purpose. So we got purpose statement, principles, and the third P in all this. I kind of like, you know, the 3P philosophy here, Gary.
Yeah.
The third P in this whole thing for many school leaders I talk with, and it happened to work for us in Solon, is to establish some pilot group. A group who's going to get really excited about this and try it out. You know, there's a time and a place, and for some school leaders, the time and a place is to ask all staff to do this. If there's ever a way just to get a small group of excited staff to work out some of the implementation kinks, we can then use their capacity, their knowledge, their expertise to help the next group of teachers get on board. And so as I think about how to lead change, sometimes we just have to have a guiding coalition.
Yep.
Some of John Cotter's work.
Yep.
And so as we think about first, a grading purpose statement, second, the principles, third is to have that pilot group that's going to help us eventually become that guiding coalition. So those are definitely the first three steps I'd recommend for school leaders that want to get started with this whole standards-based grading shift.
Yeah, that's really good. Good stepping stones for anybody, especially principals stepping into their first job, which
you
they
bet.
Likely would not tackle that in their first year. But
you're probably right. Yeah. Spoken like an experienced school leader.
Shot at and hit, that's for sure on this one. As you well know, Matt, standards-based grading can make people really anxious. What have you found to be the biggest barrier in shifting from a traditional model to the standards-based grading approach?
Yeah, one is one we just kind of talked about a little bit there, Gary, is that sometimes we get so focused on the implementation nuances without first focusing on the purpose. And so school leaders that lead with those nuances, schools that get so focused on those nuances without first having the purpose, that's like a common implementation hurdle. Secondly is, I believe that most educators believe that learning is important, but these employability skills are also important. And so sometimes a standards-based grading shift focuses so much on we're going to report out learning and we're just going to kind of like not really have a process or some type of positive evaluation towards the employability skills stuff. A common hurdle that you might hear, Gary, is, well, if we don't grade the homework, are they actually going to do it?
Right.
Or if we allow them a second chance, then, you know, are they going to try hard the first time? And what are we going to do about the students who just don't turn stuff in? And so if we value those employability skills, school leaders have to say, I value that too. We're just not going to worry about those things in the grade book as we've traditionally done it. And so once that like acknowledgement takes place and we can say, here is the intervention or the punishment accountability measure that we're going to do for the frequent offenders,
right,
in homework completion or that just aren't turning stuff in, then we can value the educators in our system who have a strong bend towards accountability and employability skills and all those things. And so sometimes there's mixed messaging because we don't take the time to actually figure out how to value those things that many educators want to see in the gradebook that we're now taking out. Third, Gary, this is probably the hardest one though. Most of our parents, most of our educators, they just experienced the old way.
Right.
They experienced it that way. And they're like, well, why are we changing? I mean, it kind of worked for me. They understand it. They think it was okay. They think that they really understand the difference between a 93% and a 95.5%,
yep.
But really there is no difference. I mean, there's no meaningful difference. They really think that, you know, they really think that a point here is the same as a point over here. And so we have actually perpetuated the idea that our system is good and valuable because of the positive experiences that many people have had. And so we just accept it as reality. And so whenever we move away from something that is part of the grammar of schooling, if I can use an old phrase there, when we move away from that, it's like stripping away something from our educators and from our parents that they found to be an unquestioned and perhaps valuable part of their educational experience. And by doing that, there's loss, there's grief. And so we have to acknowledge that. And that's a hard thing for us as school leaders.
So you gave the percentages earlier. So there's a large percentage of schools that have continued on with this. What are the things that they've done that you could pinpoint and say, they did this really well in order to get to the point where it's been accepted, not only with communities, parents, but maybe even more importantly with resistant educators?
So I think one of the largest school districts in Iowa, the largest school district in Iowa, Des Moines Public, if you were to talk to their central office administrators like I have, they would tell you that the reason that they wanted to focus on grading as learning, grading to communicate learning, is because they found it to be more of an equitable practice. And so there was just a strong rationale for why they were doing what they were doing. And they made that their North Star, and they kept pointing to their North Star. Here's what we're doing and why we're doing it. Here's what we're doing and why we're doing it. So the schools I'm seeing have just a really strong North Star. Second thing that they've done is they've not only communicated to their parental and school board stakeholders what's changing, but they've also explained to them what is staying the same. For example, every high school I know of in Iowa that has made the shift, at the end of the reporting period, they still determine letter grades from those standards. And so they're still communicating out to their parents and their other constituents like, hey, we're still communicating letter grades. We're still communicating GPAs. Students are still going to have an opportunity to apply for scholarships and financial aid, all those things. It's just the information we're using to determine those letter grades is more about learning than it is about earning.
Right.
And so they've communicated what's going to stay the same. And in fact, we made that mistake in Solon. We did not do a very good job of communicating what was going to stay the same. And that was an implementation hurdle we had to work through. Third, Gary, I think that the schools that are doing it and doing it well are going slow early to go fast later. What I mean by that is they're starting out with a meaningful pilot, or they're creating meaningful feedback loops early on in the process. Yep. To understand what's working and what's not working, as opposed to in April announcing that we're making this whole scale change in August, which unfortunately I've seen happen in a situation or two, and that's just not a meaningful timeline for a change as significant as this.
Right. This might be a good time to throw in here, how does standards-based grading prepare or not prepare high school students for college?
Some will argue that we shouldn't do it in high schools, Gary, because they don't do that in a college university setting. And I can confirm, being a professor here at UNI, that not that many professors, I know, although there are some, that use this specific grading practice. And so some would say, well, we shouldn't do that. I can also confirm, though, that the grading practices here at the university vary widely.
Right.
So if we think that we are specifically preparing our students in a traditional grading system to be exactly like it's going to be at the university, we're also kidding ourselves, because the wide variety of grading practices here. How do I know that? Just based upon more than anecdotes, Gary, a couple of colleagues and I, we actually did a recent research study that was published in NASSP Bulletin, where we interviewed and surveyed a number of college freshmen at the end of their first semester who self-reported that they experienced standards-based as a high school student.
Okay.
We just want to find out, like, did this transition like wreck your life? And they're like, nope, it didn't. I mean, there was transition struggles, but they were not too often related to this whole grading thing.
Yeah.
And here's just a crazy example, Gary. I went to a small private college just like Northwestern for my undergraduate years. The biggest class size I had was like, I don't know, like 60 students or something. And that was like a huge class, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, but some of our listeners went to large research universities, right? Where they had class sizes of like several hundred people for,
yes,
like biology 101 lecture hall. In kind of a real like silly example, I would say, well, maybe we ought to be having huge class sizes in high school to get them ready for that at the university. No high school biology
right.
teacher I know would say we ought to do that. And so my overarching point here, Gary, is this. We are going to do things at the K-12 setting that are good for kids, because we have things like Every Student Succeeds Act, No Child Left Behind, that tell us our aim in K-12 is to make sure as many kids as possible get it.
Yeah.
And so we're not going to just, you know, do something that the university does on a whim.
We are visiting with Dr. Matt Townsley, a national renowned speaker, presenter, and writer on the topics of standards-based grading and assessment practices in this episode of Transforming Education Leadership Lessons. Matt, what's one thing that you're working on right now that might surprise our listeners?
That's a really good question, Gary. From someone that has a math background and an educational leadership background, I'm writing a textbook right now, Gary, on assessment. I'm writing a textbook. Okay. Now, if you were to go back and page my English teachers in high school, they'd say, all right, Matt Townsley was an okay writer, but I really liked math. And so here I am trying to write an assessment and grading textbook for future teachers and current teachers. And so it is a part of a series that really focuses in on different aspects of assessment called I'm not going to do a little advertisement here, but basically I'm writing a textbook on assessment and grading. And my aim is this. I believe that if we really want our educators to really understand and implement that the purpose of grades ought to be communicating learning, that we have to start at the pre-service level.
Yes.
We also have to be a part of this school leadership graduate education as both you and I are a part of. And so it's just going to take a whole system approach to do that. And as I've looked at, you know, the kind of the typical assessment undergraduate or graduate level teacher education books, some of the best ones have maybe a token chapter on grading or standards-based grading. And so this specific textbook is going to be hopefully coming out here in the next couple of years that will help teachers really focus in on the intersection of assessment and grading.
Well, I've got no problems doing an advertisement for the name of the book if you want to give it.
Using Grading to Support Student Learning. It will be the name of the textbook here.
That's got a positive spin to it. I think it's going to be a bestseller, right?
All right. I hope so. Yep. I hope so.
Yeah. You had mentioned earlier about the pandemic, and I'm interested to know what you've learned or felt or observed that you believe we should have probably learned during the pandemic that we could continue to use again in regard to grading and our practices. Can you draw a connection between those two, what we had to do because of remote learning, and then what works that we ought to keep doing?
Yeah, you bet, Gary. So I think back in the spring pandemic, we really acknowledged more educators really recognized that students do actually learn at different rates and different paces. I think it was in our head, but it really came out. We thought about, what about all these distractions at home? What about these interruptions with remote learning? What about all the things that students are experiencing at home? And we all know, both you and I know, as Gary, as experienced educators, there's always been stuff going on at home. It's just now it was going on for pretty much everybody. And it was like highlighted and right in front of us. Mm-hmm. And so we saw a lot of what I would call do no harm grading practices that were highlighted and implemented back in the spring of 2020. And some schools, as I saw, when, you know, August of 2020 rolled around, they're like, okay, let's just kind of go back to the old way. But as the pandemic continued to play out in the first, you know, half of the current school year, there were some schools that said, hey, you know what, maybe we ought to kind of circle back to some of that flexibility we were offering students back in the spring. And so I hope that we can continue to learn from these do no harm grading practices, like providing incompletes, like providing more flexibility or learning deadlines, like thinking less about homework completion and more about how much students have learned. Thinking less about letter grades and 85.6s versus 82.6s and more about how much students have learned. And I think that there are some schools that I know of that are trying out those things. In fact, here in a couple of weeks, AASA, the National Superintendent's Organization, their School Administrator Magazine, they asked me to write an article highlighting some of these schools that are doing these things in the current school year. And so you're going to see an article coming out here in the next couple of weeks called, I think it's called Grading in the Midst of the Pandemic, highlighting some schools in Iowa and across the country that were kind of hanging on to those do no harm grading practices in the midst of the current school year as well. Now, the extent to which they hang on after this year, I hope that they do. I hope that the success, the empathy, the understanding that we experienced this semester is anecdotally and empirically helpful for us as we move forward.
Well, even in higher education or the preparing of principals in the last year, it was really the same thing when you're talking about shadowing activities or internships or just having access to information was a struggle for people that are teachers and trying to juggle all that. So we went through really a spring, summer, and first part of fall with our default response being we're going to give everybody a little grace. And it's amazing how the motivational factor ticks up when people know they're getting treated with respect and getting treated with professionalism and with grace and understanding. Yes. All of those things which didn't used to figure into grading, right? 100%. The negatives did, but not the positives. So, yeah. Anyway, Matt, what are you curious about right now in the world of education?
Yeah, well, obviously I'm curious about these do no harm grading practice things and the extent to which they will hang on. Right now, what I'm also curious about is what are the nuances of implementing standards-based grading in different content areas? Physical education is one that comes to mind. It's a very, like, there's like a psychomotor aspect to it. The fine arts come to mind where they're very like performance oriented. And so I've been thinking about that and talking with educators and writing a paper or two here or there about that. There was a paper we just had published in Studies in Educational Evaluation called, it was something along the lines of, I was supposed to get an A, successes and challenges of implementing standards-based grading in physical education, right? Where there's this norm of I just show up and dress out and participate in physical education, and so I get an A. And these teachers that implemented standards-based grading in their physical education class and some of the things that they really felt helped elevate the importance of physical education while also holding students to a higher standard, but yet also the nuances and complexities of implementing that and having the right resources and gym space and working with parents to understand that it wasn't just about dressing out anymore. Like,
sure.
But overall, they saw it as being a valuable, valuable thing for them. In fact, they saw it as helping like put PE on the same playing field as their math and science teacher colleagues. And so I'm interested in kind of figuring out how what this looks like. Secondly, I'm always interested in the supports that teachers in general need, that they ask for, want, and desire from school leaders in implementing this, right? So every year, Gary, that especially in Iowa, as we move forward, there's more and more secondary teachers that are doing this standards-based grading thing. But it doesn't necessarily mean that we're doing it well.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily mean that we know the specific sequence of professional learning or the responsiveness that we need to have. I mean, we're mixing in people who maybe got a really rock star experience to grading assessment at Northwestern or UNI in their teacher education program. We're mixing them in with someone who's been teaching in the schools for 15 years and doesn't know anything about it. So how can school leaders be responsive to both of those educators' needs as they move forward? The other thing just more broadly I'm always thinking about is just how do school leaders lead change? I know it's not something new, but I'm just always fascinated with the conditions in which school leaders are able to find entry points to lead meaningful change and the feedback loops they're able to utilize to help make those change processes meaningful and more than just an event.
Right. That might be another podcast right there. for sure, it could be. Matt, what are you listening to right now or reading that our people might be interested in? And it seems like if there's one thing that people listening to the podcast always respond about, it's I always want to know what that book is or what their interests are, and they keep a list of their own.
Yeah, that's a really good question there. As our educational leadership faculty here at UNI, we've been reading The Power of a Positive Team by John Gordon. John Gordon came to the School Administrators of Iowa conference a number of years ago as a speaker, and that's been a really helpful, not just team building experience for our educational leadership team, but also just something to think about and to share with our future school leaders out there. You know, what's it look like to build a positive team? And what are those energy vampires? Who are they? And how do we acknowledge and work alongside them? What's it mean if I'm a brand new school leader and I'm entering in my first principalship and they already have the building leadership team assembled?
Yeah.
And maybe it's not very functional. How do I build a positive team around me while trying not to too much disrupt the school culture? And so those are some of the takeaways that I'm having from The Power of a Positive Team. Another book that I have been maybe rereading is What We Know About Grading, kind of the researchy side of what we know about grading. That's kind of whetting my appetite to continue to investigate and think about what the next book is needs to be written. or what new empirical studies need to be considered out there. What we know about grading is just a book that summarizes 100 years of grading research leading up to about 2016. And so, you know, sometimes we implement things and there's a strong research base there. Other times it's just we do it because it's the best we know how. And sometimes we don't know it. And so let's investigate it and find out if it works.
Sure.
And so anchoring myself in understanding what really has worked and what's not out there is continually keeping my mind moving forward to support school leaders and teachers out there in implementing their best grading practices possible in their schools.
Well, your passion for this is obvious as you speak and didn't lose a beat or any energy. There was no energy vampires in this one. Appreciate what you've done, what you're doing, and it really has made a difference. I'm not sure that I can put one name of somebody in Iowa in front of standards-based grading or grading and assessment and the changes necessary other than yours.
And
so we're privileged at Northwestern College to have you part of it. And also, this will be used in a couple of our classes for aspiring principals, and I think that'll be really good for them. So I don't want to get you out of here without asking, is there something that I should have asked that I'm just not smart enough to ask you?
Well, Gary, it's not really related to the topics that we've talked about so far, but I'd be remiss to not share this in this venue that my faith is really important to me, Gary. I'm someone that grew up in the church, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I was a church person per se. I mean, both my parents are pastors, but my faith is so important to me. My wife and I, when we were married, the most important thing for us when we got married was to find a church that we both felt comfortable in. And that guides me. As I talked earlier about a school having its North Star in related to grading, Jesus Christ is my North Star. And I know that I fail, and fall and falter in that area of my life frequently. But he is that person that is my North Star. And it's not always easy to say in being a public educator. I know that. But this is just a wonderful venue, I think, to share that and maybe to make a connection with a listener or two out there who's saying, you know what? Wouldn't it be great if I also, too, could just relate to somebody else who is involved in the schools that really wants that to be the North Star of their life? Like, I just want to open up this, like my email inbox or whatever to talk with that person, as I'm sure you have many times in your life, Gary, of just talking with people about the things that are most important in their lives. And so didn't ask that question, but here I am answering it for you.
Well, that's very good. And it really fits in with some PD we did for our asynchronous approach to our programs. And one of the, I'm going to say modules, but we put together a four-module professional development for our adjuncts on the importance of doing asynchronous learning right. And at Northwestern, one of the expectations is that there's a faith integration component. And we're fortunate here to have some pretty good examples of how they do that within their classes. So really appreciate what you said. What we found is that I'm going to say 80%, it might be 60, it might be 90% of our adjuncts are really somewhat comfortable opining on scripture and how this could be good for you. But nonetheless, we try to do that and try to get that component as part of our work, as part of our communication with students on a weekly basis. And so your tone and your message is well received by us. So thanks so much for being with us.
It's been my pleasure, Gary. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely.
I appreciate the contributions you're making, not only to Northwestern, but to around the state and country.
Well, thank you. Well, we want to thank Matt Townsley for his time and sharing his wisdom and his thoughts on grading, on assessment, on leadership, and then maybe most importantly on how faith has impacted him. Leslie, welcome, and thanks for being here. And what'd you catch on the highlights from Matt Townsley?
Yes, he was so much fun to talk to, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Which sounds like a paradox when we're talking about grading, but you're right, his passion just rises to the top. And as he mentioned, just the K-12 setting really should be designed to do stuff that's good for the kids. And he's right there with the grading and assessment and how we're empowering those students to be their best. So his explanation in his book on switching to standards-based grading is a great how-to guide. And he really walked us through some of those barriers and some of those points that really made a difference. And also the importance and value of PLC going along right with switching standards-based grading. You know, you talked about three P's for district leaders, for principals to start with, just as one of the takeaways. And that first one is the most important, to determine the purpose of grading, yep. Right, with your staff. What's the number one reason for grading? And secondly, the principles for the grading. And third, to pilot it, to test it out and figure out some of those bugs before you make it maybe district-wide.
Yeah, that was just a good 1-2-3-step process for leaders to use, and not just with standards-based grading, but with a lot of initiatives. So I took away a couple comments that seemed common sense, but not used, and I need to use them more. But the purpose of grading is to communicate learning. And then his comment about do-no-harm grading practices made a lot of sense to me, and those things, I think, resonate with a lot of people. But
certainly, my favorite phrase that he mentioned was to get the gargly gook out of the grade book and maybe out of some of our practices. And that's a bit of a takeaway from the pandemic as well, where we really had to focus in on what mattered most.
Right.
And takeaways we can take from that time might be those do no harm and just the flexibility and grace that we have for students. Can that be always?
Yeah, I would just really recommend looking at some of Matt's stuff from his website. It's a good background on grading, assessment, and a bunch of other things too. But he has tons of resources that you'd find whatever topic that you're on grading that you want, he would have. So we appreciate him sharing that with us.
Absolutely. And his recommendations for books, The Power of a Positive Team by John Gordon,
yes.
Which right now the Power of Positive Summit is going on, which John Gordon has many speakers for free that you can listen to and has many great books for anyone, but especially for educators. And also What We Know About Grading by Susan Brookhart and Thomas Guskey.
Yeah, you could just tell the passion from Matt. And we want to thank all of you for listening to Transforming Education Leadership Lessons. We know that you have many options, and we appreciate you spending time with us. As a leader in education, you matter, and how you lead matters to a whole bunch of people that you serve on a daily basis. You were created for significance. For Leslie, for Wyatt, for Mike, until next time, inspire and influence.